It's October 28th, 1999. This is an interview with Mort Childress. The interviewers, this is a little unusual. We have three interviewers here, Betsy Brinson, John Ernst, and Yvonne Baldwin. And we are interviewing Mr. Childress in his residence in Louisville, Kentucky. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Childress, for meeting with us today. And I'd like to begin by asking you a little bit of biographical information about yourself. For example, where and when were you born?
In Louisville, Kentucky, October 1st, 1923.
1923, okay. So that makes you how old?
76.
Can you tell me just a little bit about your growing up? Who was in your family? What sort of education you had?
I went to Louisville Male High School, and I have three sisters.
Mm-hmm. And one of those sisters is John's
mother.
Okay.
And then I went into the Merchant Marine and then in the Pacific. Went in the Marine Corps, in the the Merchant Marine in the Atlantic and the Marine Corps in the Pacific.
Was that?
Spent about over three years during the war.
During the war.
World War II.
Okay. And then what happened to you after the war?
I got several jobs and finally thought I'd like to be on the police department. And in 1948, I went on the Louisville Police Department.
Okay. You said the family thought you would like to. What did you think about joining the police force?
Oh, I liked it, yeah.
So that made sense to you?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
What sort of requirements were there at that time for you to become a policeman?
You had a written test was required, mm-hmm. a physical. You had to be like 9 or 10 at the time, and then go through class, recruit class for, at that time I believe it was 10 weeks. They fluctuated at different mm-hmm. times mm-hmm. about that.
And how many others were coming into the force about the same time that you were in Louisville, do you remember?
In my class, there was 22.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. As after the war, and they needed more police, mm-hmm. regular. And, you know all about that from your brother there, don't you?
Yeah.
Johnny. It's rather difficult to get on at that time. It was. They've gone down on requirements since then as far as they had to because of, I guess, the young ladies that needed to come on the police department mm-hmm. that we needed. And, of course, we didn't get our first young ladies in 1921. I didn't know what the...
1921? You had a woman on the police in 1921?
Yes.
That was
first black
unusual.
One in 22. First black police officers in 23.
Was that pretty unusual for the time around the country?
Yes, sure was.
Why do you think Louisville was ahead of other police forces in that respect?
I don't know whether how many other police departments had young ladies, but the opinion was at that time that they couldn't police. Mm-hmm. And they were too small and weren't capable of going out there big enough and strong enough. Mm-hmm. Of course, I think that may have been a cop-out.
The black police that were hired during 1922, I believe you said?
23. One black lady in 22, two black officers in 23.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Why did the police force feel they needed to bring blacks onto
politics.
The job area? Politics. And where did they work primarily?
The two black officers, the lady officers, until in the 60s, worked in, we called it the Youth Bureau, domestic type trouble. Children on the street didn't actually do police working on the street. The black lady would be fit in that category. The two black men, they didn't want in uniform, so they put them in detective bureau.
They didn't want them out on the street in high visibility as police
officers?
Right,
right. And for a number of years, they had to change their uniforms before they went home. Go into civilian clothes.
Why do you think that was?
Well, we were prejudiced. I mean, that's the big thing. And my feeling is they didn't want any more blacks than what they felt they had to have. Mm-hmm. And as, of course, as black people begin voting, it got to politics and need the votes. So they get black. You know, as often as you can. And one, in the cards here, I have it where the director of safety at one time said there was four police ladies on a force, and he wanted to let them go because he said there wasn't any work that they were capable of doing on the police department. So he did. Of course, that brought about a furor,
and that would have been about what? Period. What
it's in here on the card. I'll give it to you.
Okay. We can read that later.
Yeah.
Well, frankly, you surprised me because I'm surprised that there were black police as early in Louisville as that. Mm-hmm. One of my questions then would be, why did they not patrol the black neighborhoods?
Why did they not patrol the black neighborhoods?
You said they didn't really work out of the street. They worked in the detective bureau.
Oh, well, afterwards they did. I have, even when they did start working on the street and everything, it's in this stack of information I have here. Offhand, I can't remember it. I know when I came on the police department in 48, if this is kind of information you're seeking. We had our physicals, well, we had our physical training at the YMCA, and the black couldn't train with us. They had to train in their facilities separate, and that went along that way for years.
So in your class, there were approximately how many blacks?
Two.
Do you have any sense that the training was similar or different?
No, they went through place with us. They had the training in place, but as far as physical contact, that we were separate.
Had the same instructors?
I don't think so. But, you know, when you got one or two police officers, which they had there for a while, would come on, and I have pictures of them when the city wanted to show how many police we had on the force, black police, and they took a picture of all of them, and so they could say we have this many black police officers on the force. Am I being too frank?
No, that's fine.
I'm just kidding.
Describe a little bit about the training that you had to undergo to become a policeman.
Well, we had to learn criminal law, state law, city ordinances. Had to pass the test, make a passing grade on the test. One of the black flunked out that came in when I did. Then the physical training was rough. It wasn't easy. Such as, I have what you had to do, but such as running a mile a certain amount of time, doing so many push-ups, doing so many chin-ups, and that type of thing. A lot of them you had to do that before you got in, and after you got in, you had to do it again to improve some. But you had to climb a rope hand over hand and that type thing. Most of the guys didn't have a lot of problems with that because at that time, most of them came from the military. About, I'd say maybe 90-95% of the police officers came from the, you know, products from the war.
Was that true for the black police as well who were coming on board?
As far as I know, but that when you say coming on board, there wasn't that many.
What are we talking about? Two, three, I
could show you each class.
Well, your but, class, if you can. If
well, my class was two, and one of them dropped out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. One of them dropped out not because of the physical training, but because of passing the test as what we had to take. We had about maybe 10, 12 subjects.
During this period.
Okay. What I'm most interested in talking to you about, Mr. Childress, is sort of some of your perceptions and recall about the sit-ins and the demonstrations here in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to go back a little bit and have you talk, if you can, about sort of what race relations were like here in the 50s, for example.
You know, this book, if you've never seen that, it's a doozy.
Principles of Police Work with Minority Groups.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I don't think you could do it today, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a lot of difficulty getting along with black people at all. In fact, I was the first commanding officer to get black women and black men working in out of the detective bureau, out of narcotics. The major at the time told me, I went to see him, I said, I need some black people to get down here, and this black, you know, the whites stand out too much. He said, Childress, they'll never work. They'll never work. I said, well, I've got to have it. You know, give me a shot. And I got females, black and white, and they worked out real good. We put them undercover and whatever.
So this would have been about what year?
60s.
Okay. And you were working in
narcotics.
Okay.
They did a good job. There has been in my time to some reverse discrimination. And that was when maybe they'd had to go down to get a black female, and I think went down as far as 84th on the list, passing up an awful lot of people to get that because of an order, to get it because of an order. But got that, and they had to go in other words, they paced up people, and then I know of a time when they placed up, in my opinion, two officers that were going for sergeant and made a black officer that was in third place. I like the black officer was in third place, but also the two that was paced up, that hurt. That hurts their family and things like that. But it's reverse discrimination because it happened way more the other way than it did that way, but it did happen.
Up until about 1960, would you say that the city hired more black women, more black men, about even on the police force?
More black men.
More black men, okay. You mentioned women in the beginning, and I just want to make sure that...
It seems a little odd that they got the first black was a woman.
But she had certain jobs that were sort of uniquely female. She was working with juveniles and those sorts of things.
Or? Not only that kept like that until, I guess, the 50s, 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about from 1922 to 1955, 60, whatever, in through that group. They work directly with females. And this director of safety is saying about, another time, at one time, inspecting taxi cabs, and that was done by the police department. See, you can't have this person because they've committed a crime or whatever. So we had one man that did that. During the war, and this is in this stuff too, but during the war, they wanted females. They didn't have enough males.
Are you talking about World War II?
Right.
Okay.
Director Severn said, no way. He knocked it out, even when he was getting ready to do it. And he knocked it out, said, there's no way females can drive cabs. But that's from the newspaper.
Well, that's interesting, though, because during World War II, so many other occupations opened up to women.
Mm-hmm.
Medicine, for
example. It finally opened up to them, of course.
Right. And women moved into the workforce. Mm-hmm. But you're saying the police force here made the decision not to do that.
The director of safety made that decision. The police department, the sergeant, wanted it, and I think it would have went along if it hadn't been for the director of safety. Mm-hmm. The director of safety is in charge of any number of things within the city of Louisville. One of them, Andremus, taxi cabs, mm-hmm. police department, fire department, so right. Health department.
Do you know about other police departments across the country during the World War II? Did they take similar position as Louisville and saying, no, we're not going to hire women, or did they?
I feel sure that most of them felt that way. Most police felt that a lady couldn't do the job of policing out here that a man can do.
Okay.
And it's through history, quite back there, that the director of safety, I think he'll make a real good officer because he's 6 foot tall. Way back there, police were, when I'm talking way back, I'd go back to 1806. But when I'm talking like even in 1900, a lot of police were 5 foot five, 5 foot four, because we're getting taller all the time.
Right. You mentioned earlier voting and how that played a role in the hiring of black police. Talk about that a little bit. Who gets elected? That for example, is the head of the Department of Safety an elected official?
He's appointed.
He's appointed.
Now he is, years and years ago in that way, but for many years, to 1929. But before that, they didn't have a civil service board. The civil service, of course, supposedly protects your job, right? Yeah, as far as religion and what you vote.
And those are appointed officials to the civil service board? Or are they elected?
There has to be two Democrats and two Republicans, and the mayor has a deciding vote.
Okay.
If it's a tie, he has a deciding vote.
So you run for that seat? No.
You do what?
I'm not being clear, but you say there are two Democrats.
They're appointed.
They're appointed.
Right.
But they're appointed on a politically partisan basis.
Right.
Well,
two Democrats and two Republicans, and the mayor, whichever party he is, you know, going to be the deciding vote.
Okay.
It works very well. As long as you got a civil court or a criminal court that. The police didn't know that they really had as many civil rights as they actually have nowadays. We found out how much civil rights we have. It used to be years ago when a police chief said you was fired, you was fired. That was it. You forgot about it. But now you can take a case to court. You know, go through civil. You have to take the route through civil service and have a hearing, go through civil service, and then you can take it on to court.
You have to forgive me, but I'm fairly new to Kentucky. I just moved here from Virginia, and frankly, it's a big surprise to me that you have to run for judge in Kentucky, because in Virginia, they're all appointed judges. And so your system, probably at other levels, is very different than the one I'm used to. And so I want to go back to my question about, you said earlier that it was important for the city to hire more blacks on the police force because they had voting power.
Well, the politicians, of course, go for numbers. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to think, if I were a politician, I want to get as many as I can, and I'm going to have to do as many for this, as much for this group as I can to get their votes.
Right. But it was the mayor that was running, or were there entities that were elected, positions that were elected closer to the police force? Like the police chief in Louisville, how does he get his job?
He's appointed.
Appointed.
He's appointed. Now we can get into politics all over the place, you know what I mean? And I don't know whether you'd understand it here. He's appointed by aldermen. We have aldermen here. But I've never seen the time that the mayor didn't get what he wanted through the board of aldermen for chief of police. So even though they say the chief comes through the board of aldermen, he really has appointed. The mayor says, I'd like to have this man. And he gets it.
Okay. I'm intrigued that you know as much history as you do. And I'm told that you're sort of the historian for the police department.
You know, they say that, but I get like requests for information, and someone will call the police department and say, I don't have that. And I'll get requests as far as Australia. And that I got one now to answer in there. But I get about 6-8 a month requests for, my great-granddad was on a police department. Do you have anything? Mm-hmm. And I think I have about perhaps 96-98% of the police that's ever been on the force. Mm-hmm. Since, I guess 1806. And at that time, up to 1856, we didn't have actually a chief of police. We had captains run the police department, and then after 1821, we had ex-official chiefs of police. He was in charge of the marshals and the chief of police. And chief of police. In 1856, we got what they actually call a chief of police nowadays. They call them both, I guess at the time, policemen and watchmen. Up to that time they called, but they did the same thing.
Okay. Were you interested in history before you joined the police force?
Well, I made my best grades in school in history.
So it goes back a long way.
Yeah, I just enjoy it.
Right. Okay.
It's a lot to find out.
Well, and you certainly have several rooms of records and files and artifacts that you showed me before we started. I haven't seen half of it. Okay. Let me go to 1960, when the sit-in started here. Where were you in the department at that point in time?
I was in I had a narcotics in a part of the vice squad. And actually, I remember very distinctly when it began. I'd have to look at the day and time, but I was about ready to get off, and I heard this one officer that I knew that worked in the 4th District. And he said, radio, send me some help at 28th and Greenwood. Said, send me some help. And the person on the radio said, how much help you need? And he said, send them all, radio. He wanted everybody down there. Because bricks were flying and whatever, you know. And we had the information that...
Well, now, wait a minute. You're thinking about the riots.
Yeah, the riots. Now, what are you talking?
I'm going back to 1960 where we had the sit-ins and the demonstrations open up stores and restaurants and theaters.
Yeah, yeah. Foundry Park.
Right.
Foundry Park was a big thing.
Right. Were you in the same position in 1960?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, I can tell you way back there when I was riding my motorcycle. a sergeant told me, he said, Childers, there's people going through, black people going through Shawnee Park. You go down there and tell them they can't go through Shawnee Park. And I said, why? You know, I didn't know why. He said, well, because they got a Chickasaw Park on up there. But I said, you said going through. He said, yeah, they're cutting through there instead of going around the street and going through the park, and people are complaining. He said, they're not allowed to go through the park. I couldn't do that, so I said, oh, yes, sir. And I couldn't make him not, I didn't do it. I just went on down there and rode around and stuff like that, but I couldn't do that.
Is that in the 50s?
When yeah. Mm-hmm. Then doing the sit-ins and whatever, when they wanted to go to the restaurants and into the movie theaters, we were sent out to keep them from going into those places. And I remember I had the detail at Fountain Ferry Park, and I was told there's a line there, don't let anybody black pass that line. And there was a lawyer, I won't say his name, he's still working. But he was down there, and he got all rough and that. I couldn't do anything but stop those people from going across the line and going to Fountain Ferry Park. So I locked him up, or had him locked up, the man that worked for me. Had him locked up because he was causing a lot of trouble.
Is he white or black?
Black. Oh, no, white. He's a white officer. You've probably seen him through these. And I got along very well with the black lawyers and whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, he was down there with the people. And
but the lawyer now?
He was a lawyer.
Okay.
He was a lawyer, and he was down there with the people. So when he went to court, of course, I had to testify, and he got so mad with the judge and that, which wasn't unusual for him. I forget how many hours he got, 12 hours or something like that. After a while, of course, black, as they should have, got permission to go into Fountain Ferry Park, and to eating establishments and whatever. And I've heard some of the restaurant owners say, if I had to do that, I'll just quit business and stuff like that, which is nothing unusual for that time.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about Fountain Ferry Park. It's a public park?
Oh, it was a public park with a lot of a racing derby and a Ferris wheel, mm-hmm. all those types. Amusement park.
Mm-hmm. Did it have a swimming pool?
Yes, it did.
Tennis courts?
No tennis courts, but a swimming pool.
And so prior to the early 60s, all of this was closed to blacks?
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Were you involved during any of the arrest of the demonstrators in the early sit-ins? Were you on duty then?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I went out on Taylor Boulevard. Well, let's see now. I'm getting into housing now, you know what I mean? And I guess that's part of what you're thinking about, isn't it?
Well, I still wanted to keep us on the early 60s and the whole effort to open up the stores and the theaters and the restaurants.
Mm.
And I know that there were demonstrators who were arrested.
Lots of them.
By the police. And I've seen both I've seen photos of both black and white policemen. And I've had one story told to me, and I'd like to hear your version of this, that that the black policemen very frequently were sent to make the arrest of the demonstrators, maybe more than the white policemen were, but at the same time I've seen photos of white
police. I don't know about that. I wouldn't think that, but you know, it may be someone's opinion. I know I used to, when I rode, they ride one person cars now. We used to call them one man cars, but one person cars now. Some of the best people that ever worked for me were black. And some of the best officers that ever worked for me were female. I don't particularly agree with riding in our West End now, where most of it is black, with one person cars. I think the people, when they do that, the police officers will take and pass up things they wouldn't ordinarily pass up. You know, I wouldn't want a young female or male, either one, but female in particular, if she was 5 foot tall and weighed 100 pounds, I wouldn't expect her to stop a car, a black or white people fussing or hollering or cursing or anything. One police officer may have trouble with two people or one person, where there be two can handle six, eight people. Just because of, like I said, but I'm all in favor in fact, I think sometime we'll have more females on the department than males. It's a good possibility. Everything being equal, they have a tendency to outright us on the test.
Mm-hmm. So, were you ever sent to the site of any of the demonstrations?
Well, Fountain Ferry Park, like I told you, and arrested.
Right, but in the early 60s?
Oh, yeah. I was sent to like a picture show, a moving picture show, and they'd say, don't let them go in.
Right.
And I never had any trouble like that. I tell
can
you
we
like.
Talk about that theater just a few minutes here?
Well, I'd say, now look, we're going to have to arrest you, and it's no use doing it. You made your point. It's a lot to. And carry them and put on a truck. Well, I didn't do that, and I was a commanding officer at the time, and not that I wouldn't have or anything like that, but I noticed that two or three people that I thought, well, these people have a lot to do with what's happening here. So I went over and talked with them and said, look, how many of you want to get arrested? This is going to get in a paper and all that. What's the use? The less 30 or 40. I said, okay, we're going to leave. So it's how you talk, I think, sometime to people. Mm-hmm. And you know, you don't want to get where you're anxious and I guess to the point that you had a bad day at home or something like that, and let it bother you what you're doing on the police department.
I want to ask you about the theater, for example. I want to talk about the people who were there best that you recall. Mm. Were there both blacks and whites?
At some time there would be a few white with the black, a few. Now, I didn't make all the theaters, you know, that's went on a long time. And,
do you remember the name of this particular theater?
Oh, let's see.
Or where it was located?
Yeah, it was on Market Street, and I'm thinking maybe about 23rd.
Okay.
Something in through there. It's not there anymore.
Of the demonstrators there that day, would you say there were more men, more women, sort of evenly divided?
More young people. They were younger. I wouldn't know. You know what I mean? I didn't see any drastic thing. But those things, I don't really pay too much attention to unless it's something that way different. You know what I mean? It's men and women, I think, are about equal to talk with. I don't want to say handle, it sounds, you know.
But, and you, how old is a young person to you?
12.
12?
Mm-hmm.
So there were people there as young as 12?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And did you make arrests?
I never.
Or were there other police there that day who made arrests?
Not at the two or three times I was at one of those. I talked my, I talked our way out, you know. So some police are pretty domineering, you know what I mean? They got their job to do and that's their job, and I just don't agree with that.
Do you remember after that day talking to other police colleagues about the demonstrations and sort of what the attitudes were?
No, you want to hear some curse words. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I wouldn't do that. But actually, you know, some of it, those, what you know, whatever, and everything like that, they, what right do they have or something like that, you know. They brought up that way, probably. I wasn't. But, yeah, you know, they weren't very sympathetic, most of them. The biggest percentage was, and I'd say, or at least 50 or more. And it gradually got different, came about different. In all probability, going to school, black and white going to school is going to make a big difference for a period of time. And it is. I remember when they used to say there was a black man and a white lady in a car. They'd arrest the white lady, or if it's a black, if it's a white man and a black lady, they arrest a black lady. You know, I mean, just over. That was the way it was. Yeah.
Why is that? I actually have seen photos that made me think that maybe more of the arrests were of women.
Oh, it was. It was. Sure, it was.
Why was that? Was it easier to arrest a woman?
It's the way men feel, you know, about, they don't blame them. Prostitution, for instance. They don't blame a man. I don't know how much this goes this way now. It's doing different to some extent. But they don't blame a man. They blame the woman. She's a prostitute.
Right. But I'm talking about, again, going back to the demonstrations and the sit-ins.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen photos of arrest,
mm-hmm.
and I've wondered why at least the photos seem to be more of women than of men who were arrested, and I'm wondering.
I don't know that. I didn't actually see that.
Okay.
I don't doubt that there would be some of that. Mm-hmm. The way I've seen it is with gambling, prostitution, and things like that, where 7th Street is white prostitutes, 8th Street is black prostitutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're talking just generally.
Hey, that's the way it was. Yeah, red light district. I don't know whether that's...
Well, during that period of actually almost several years where there were sit-ins and demonstrations in Louisville, do you recall, was there any evidence that there were members of the Klan or white citizens' councils that came down to the demonstrations just to sort of object to what was going on? To
I don't know. We've always had Klan or some little parts of it here. At one time, I have a picture of a motorcycle platoon that escorted a Klansman that was killed on a motorcycle, you know, had the names and everything. And the Klan was here years ago in the police department. I don't think that is now at all.
The Klan was actually in the police department?
Oh, part of the, some police officers, yeah.
Well, for example, this period, again, the early 60s, could you kind of estimate for me of the police force? Are we talking about three or four people you knew who were affiliated with the Klan?
Oh, no. I'm not talking about in the 60s.
Of the police?
Remember, I'm telling you, I'm going back to 1806, early 1900s, and I can show you the picture about 1926.
Right. When the Klan was clearly more present in Kentucky in the
right.
late 19th, early 20th.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was, at least in my opinion, I don't think there's any Klan. There may be some people that thought like the Klan, but they didn't organize or anything.
Okay, not in the 60s, though.
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Tell me one story. I don't even know if you want to put it on tape. At one time, there was a big demonstration, and the cops came down to break it up. It involved marbles. Tell me something about marbles.
About marbles?
Yeah, about breaking windows to stop
them. Oh, not about marbles. Slingshots, and that's what I heard. And they had brother or sister on some of the windows through their neighborhood. Of course, they didn't want a brother or sister them to bother them or anything. Well, when you're having trouble like that, I guess some people get to the point that they're thinking, how can we do away with this? Well, I think a few windows were broken out, and
this was in the black neighborhood.
Yeah,
okay.
And it didn't last too long before the brothers and sisters, I feel like the windows were broken out, that they got with the others and said, "Look, don't have to do that." They didn't know who did it, mm-hmm. Of course. I don't think, you know, but that's what you're talking about.
I think so.
Yeah, they got slingshots and marbles. Would have been the best thing to use in a slingshot, I think. Little stones or marbles. But actually, the riot didn't last that long. There was only two people killed.
Well, let's go to the riot in 1968. Mm. You started to talk about that, and you were recalling where you were.
I was in the 4th District.
Okay.
And I think I probably was at that time, too. I was sent down to the 4th District, for sure. I can't remember then whether I was actually in charge of some of the 4th District or the narcotic squad, but I was sent down there to see what I could do, you know, because I'd been riding down there in the 4th District for quite a while. I knew a lot of the people. I actually didn't think the riot was as bad as what a lot of people thought, but then I'd been on the war, you know, and that too, and that, you know what I mean, so that might have had something to do with it. But I didn't have any trouble to mount anything, you know. Some of the people that were involved and came in from out of state caused some problems, and we're getting and saying to people who own stores down there that weren't completely out of commission. They're saying that now we'll protect you for some money, you know, and I was able to take care of that.
The people out of state were saying that to the store?
Well, they had people here that they knew.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that you know there's people who came in from out of state.
Mm-hmm, I do.
Mm-hmm. And that was it. Of course, there wasn't too much coming out about the pills that were passed out down at the riot. And I'm sure you got pictures of people up on a building or something.
No, I don't think I've seen those. Talk
probably
about
got
that. What kind of pills were being passed out?
To explain it real easy, it'd be the kind to give you energy. Amphetamines,
mm-hmm.
Methamphetamines. Mm-hmm. A lot of people would call them, as they go back, diet pills, you know, keep you where you can't sleep at night, probably. But that kind of pills were passed out. I wrote a letter, and I hope it went all the way through. I don't know whether it did or not. You send it to the next person in charge, and they take it on about it and thought there might be possibly some trouble down there because of that.
Well, and there was some looting, of course.
Well, sure.
And I've also seen photos of overturned cars and one sort of fiery photo. I'm not sure whether it was a telephone booth or a car, but there was apparently some property damage.
A lot of property damage, yeah, a lot of it. In fact, I don't, have you rode through there?
No, well, yes, but I didn't know about the riot at the time I rode through there. So.
Well, it still has some scars there from that long ago. Mm-hmm.
How big of an area did it encompass? You said 28th and Greenwood was where it started?
Oh, it spread out. I even got in here, but the chief of police said how far it was that they were. Offhand, I can't think of it. It's a fair size area, probably 6 by 6 by 6 squares, a little more. Mm-hmm. But the big part of it happened right around 20th and Greenwood.
Mm-hmm. Did Georgia Davis Powers' family have her restaurant there at that time? The Senators, I think they called it.
Is that the lady that got shot?
No.
No.
She got elected to.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I really don't know. I remember what you're talking about now. But I don't know. Actually, you had a policeman that walked down through there, but well-known and liked. Mm-hmm. That was his beat through that area. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of those things that got out of hand, you know.
Well, I was going to ask you.
It was a lot of it was over a police officer, probably. And you know about that if you...
No, I don't. Tell me.
Well, it's in here, and I don't want to mix up on it too much, but mm-hmm. I could pick it out of there for you. They were fussing about this police officer and how he was a shot or something. I can't remember.
Was a what?
I think he shot trouble with a... I'm not sure. I had to look it up.
Okay.
But it's easy to look up. You know what I mean? It's just... Mm-hmm. The idea that, I guess my memory's slipping.
And so the community became upset over this situation?
And well, he was fired and then put back to duty. And
that was after the riot, though.
I think it was maybe before that he was put back to duty.
Okay.
And I'd have to look, like I say, look it up, but...
All right.
That was what I think maybe some of the people used that thing and, mm-hmm. you know, they was going to stop the racists. Like, it's, I think I got one of these things here that says, stop the racists. Here's your Ku Klux Klan. Here's when King was here.
Mm-hmm. The KKK supports Louis Nunn, huh?
God.
Okay.
It's just some of the stuff that was out on the street.
Yeah, why don't you show them some of those, and then let me show you a few photographs and
okay.
see if that actually triggers anything for you. I showed those. Saw those earlier.
Take it home now.
I got so much. I haven't even started this yet. I was going to write it up, and I haven't gotten to start it yet. This is when the black worked the black neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So this is a photo, 1928.
Mm-hmm. Here's when the police cubs better crime bar than law, says chief. He says hit him in the head. Can't believe that. Well, that's all kinds of
stuff. Let me show you a few photos that were taken in Louisville during the sit-ins and just see if they...
Well, I remember when Hasnars was having a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's code.
That's a photo of four young people who were sitting in the street, I guess.
That's nothing unusual. It wasn't anything unusual for that time. But Hasnard's right up the street here.
The restaurant? What kind of, is it still open today?
Funeral home.
Funeral home, oh. So they were protesting a funeral home?
Yeah, it's two of them that did that.
Weren't there enough black funeral homes or big business in the black community?
Well, this is a white funeral home.
Oh, it is?
Up here.
Right. But I wonder if some of the black funeral home owners didn't object to, they probably didn't want the white funeral homes opened up, you think, to blacks? Because they'd lose business.
I really don't know. I haven't heard that.
How about that one? Does that?
Oh, I've seen so much of this that it's things that happened back in those days. Yeah.
You remember ever hearing anything about an Easter boycott that went on that the black churches had here in about 62, I believe?
I don't recall.
They made a decision not to buy any new clothes from the department
stores. Oh, I heard about that. Yeah, but I didn't know. I know that, you know, that was boycotting, but I didn't realize it's Easter.
Mm-hmm. There's some people being arrested. How many people could you get in one of those police wagons?
Well, at times I guess it looked like a sardine can or something, you know, but
comfortably, what would you guess?
Oh, 10
people?
12.
12, okay.
Six on each side, maybe one sitting down in the middle.
But would you put more than 12 people in there?
Well, they have done that before, put more than 12 in there.
Okay. I had one gentleman tell me that he was arrested here. He was a teacher in an all-black school in 60, and that it was a black policeman who he knew and knew his family who arrested him, and they drove him a block down the street, told him to get out and go home, but they weren't going to take him in and book him.
That could happen. It could happen with white men. Yeah. I mean, it happens both ways.
You remember any journalists that were involved during that period? Did they come down to take pictures?
Oh, sure. They'd be around to take pictures. They get there whenever they could. They listened to the. At that time, it was probably unlawful to listen to the. Oh, here's a fellow who used to work for me, killed quite a few people. Jesse Taylor. He worked for me. One of the best policemen I ever had. He killed a few people. The thing is, the last two he killed was trying to rob him.
Can I see that photo of him?
Right there.
So that he's a black policeman. So there's an example of black police who were making arrests in the demonstrations.
He's an exceptional black policeman. I don't know how many children he had, maybe five or six. He put them all through college. He worked two jobs. He worked for me, and I'd get a little peeved sometime because I'd be waiting to go home. And Jesse wasn't in yet, you know, I think. He said, "Cam, I'm out there working." And he was. He worked all the time. Mm. One of the best police, probably the best policeman I ever had work for me. Yeah.
Now, what's the Blue Boar?
Oh, that's a restaurant. Okay. Most of them are closed now. There may be one left open in Louisville. I don't know.
And this is a photo in front of a theater where Montgomery Clift and Marilyn Monroe were playing in The Misfits.
Well, I'll be darned. Well, her dresses have gotten expensive, I'll say that.
Yeah.
I've seen so much of this that, you know, it's pretty much.
Here's another one. Can you tell me what street that is? Do you recognize that at all?
I think it's 4th Street. That is 4th Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's 4th Street north of Broadway. North of 4th and Broadway.
Okay. And this photo of police making arrests looks like there was a little confrontation going on there.
Well, it was, a lot of times, confrontation going on.
And one of the officers has his, what do you call it, a billy club out? You think those got used?
Oh, the billy clubs got used. I don't know how much then, but the billy clubs were... Police would take pride in their billy clubs and get the hardest wood they could get.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, that's way back there in those days. They used to be proud of their of their clubs. I don't think they used them that much. I never struck a person with a club while I was on the police department.
And you don't recall that there was much of that during the early 60s?
No, not unusual. Probably more before that than was at that time. When the probably before 1929,
right,
when the Silver Service came in.
Okay.
That's the old paddy wagon.
Okay. Do you have anything you want to...
Do you remember any anti-war demonstrations going on? The civil rights movement?
Oh, you got something there. Oh, no, not that amount to anything. Here's something, though, John, I don't know why you'd be interested in that. Somebody said, do you know anybody that...
Yeah, that's interesting.
Now, this fellow that gave me that, I see him once a month, or I could see him anytime, of course, the telephone, but he's a veteran, and... He just got me a book somewhere from someplace about that and knows quite a bit about the war. But I don't know whether you'd even be interested in that or not.
What about the Vietnamese community? There was a pretty big Vietnamese community that came in after the Vietnam War. I've seen Courier Journal articles that they even set up a hotline, that Harvey Sloan had set up a hotline. Do you remember anything?
It wasn't where I was, and I remember hearing it, and then he wanted some people, of course, that were fluent in speaking their language, trying to get, you know, some communicate in case I'm having, but I don't know how much it was at one time, quite a bit of problems in the area. Probably around... the 5th District, down around Central Park, and through that area.
Yeah.
There's quite a few. I don't know, maybe they've settled somewhere else now. Quite a few of them have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't remember many anti-war demonstrations, do you? Louisville didn't?
It wasn't a big deal. Of course, like I say, a lot of us had been in World War II, and wasn't anything, you know. I was in charge of burying people. I got a picture of the cemeteries and me, and in fact, I got a bunch of pictures of people that were killed in the Skywinds Bowl and some people's heads chopped off and stuff like that he wasn't supposed to have, not with a camera, but he did have it. And I was stationed with 6 other fellas, and we was in charge of seeing that the people were buried here and there. I tell you, when a person is missing in action, you know what I mean, or whatever, he's probably buried somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember where we had a bulldoze out a big area, and you'd get the natives to work for you back there. It's 26, 28 cents an hour on Guam and other islands too. But take and throw the Japanese in there and cover them up. You know, I don't know. I told them they kept me in after the war because I got a pretty good memory about remembering things. I remember where most of those graves were now. If anybody asked me, I tell them. If they didn't ask me, I want to get home. You know. So, but I got pictures of those. somebody cut off their head, you know, yeah, I mean, stuff like that. It's war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I remember one time we went over in a little island called Tinian, and looking for a pilot was shot down over there. And we got information that he was drugged through the village to say, hey, this is what we do to the Americans, the Japs said. A real small island. And so we went over there and looked and found some people, told us where he was, buried. We dug him up. There he was. Had a wire around his leg where they had been. He was pulled through the village. So things like that, that I don't think most people realize what goes on in a war. Mm-hmm. You know, you see your buddy killed, that's pretty rough. Mm-hmm. Or buddy's killed. And it happens all the time, and people don't realize that that happened. People change a lot. Some of them shouldn't be left to look in society, probably. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the way things happen.
Do you remember many, after the Vietnam War, do you remember many Vietnam veterans coming on the Louisville Police Force?
John, I really... I don't know. You know, I mean, I would think there wasn't too many. Probably a number of them came back to their jobs. You know, I don't know. Maybe, if I was guessing, I'd say 20.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure of that, but probably came back. To,
yeah. Well, you'd said a lot of them after World War II, like
all
yourself.
After World War II.
Long, but was, after Vietnam, it's not the same. That not
oh,
as many
no, not near as many, you know, people left the force. And, of course, when I say they come on after World War II, then we're getting a little bit older, you know, and the younger men were getting drafted and wasn't so many like that. But the average age of a policeman, probably about 1920, was probably 40 years old. They didn't come on to maybe there was over 25 anyway, probably 36, 40. And why? Politics. There was one police department ready to come on when another one was going to have to leave because a different administration. See, so that happened. A civil service took care of that, helped that situation in 1929. Schooling helped a whole lot. In 1919, when we got a professor from Yale High School and started educating police better.
One thing I'd like to ask is particularly in the late 60s and early 70s, there was so much confrontation in big cities between protest groups who had begun to target police as pigs. Do you remember that, and what was your reaction to that word?
At that time, I'm not sure that you're probably more familiar with it when that was going on. Trying to say in the 70s, late 70s, something like that. But anyhow, we had people from the FBI come to our department and was saying, be awful careful when you get a call, because they may be calling you to kill you. Mm-hmm. The FBI came in and told us that and said it's going on around different parts of the country. Of course, you thought about that. A policeman can't think too much about that, or he'd never be a policeman, you know what I mean? But it's got to enter your mind, so you're real careful. It was also known back in those days, I guess not now. Watch so you don't get sued. But there's another thought is, I wouldn't want to go around with this thought, but if you kill somebody, they can't testify against you. That's true. You know what I mean?
That's true.
But there's a tremendous amount of change in the police department nowadays. If the chief of police was there when I first came on, he was on the chief of police for 14 years. It's the longest we've ever had the chief of police was 14 years. Named Eustace. If he knew there was females riding in a car by themselves, nowadays are males even he'd turn over in his grave. Mm-hmm. He thought there's no way that there shouldn't be two officers in a car. And of course, while he was on, there was no females the road. But things change, and they're, like I say, it wouldn't surprise me if one day there's not more females on the force. And I think we don't need the strength that was thought that we needed at one time. You know, it was thought that after a while, of course, 5 foot 8 or 9 back in 1920s and 30s was about, what, people 3 or 4 inches taller nowadays, you know, something like that. So that was fairly large. Now we've got a couple of guys and that where they, you're supposed to go to these meetings and stuff like that. I got that kind of stuff.
Very small. And Braden's friends, one minister, what kind of names?
George Shuttlesworth?
No, George. My God, what's his name?
But Braden used to, most of the police didn't like the Bradens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they had a printing press in there. It was probably as good as the Courier Journal had, where they were on Broadway. But they had another place down in, I forget, way down there close to where Miles Park used to be. And they said they're causing a lot of trouble. I was working for a captain at the time. And he said they're causing a lot of trouble. The children said, he said, have you got an old camera? I said, well, I got a good camera. He said, I don't care. He said, go down there, or have somebody go down there and take pictures. There's a lot of automobiles that were from out of state. And they have a meeting, you know, from out of state, a lot of people from out of state. And he said, take down those numbers and act like you're taking pictures, you know. I said, can you get on private property? He said, well, use your own judgment, you know, like that. Believe me, you have to use a lot of your own judgment on the police department if you want to get things done, you know. You can be on the fence, and it's how much you're going to do for the public if you really feel like that. But anyhow, I really don't know why. I know one time she went down in the West End, and there was a lady down there. She's dead now, but she owned a grocery store down there, and her daughters. They thought the same way, and so did her son. But Ann Braden went down there to make a speech. No way in the world she's going to go down in that territory and make a speech. They run her out, and then...
That was a black neighborhood or a white?
A white neighborhood.
Oh, okay.
And she knew after that, you don't go down that neighborhood, because they're going to get you one way or the other. And of course, she accused the police of sending by while, I don't know that because I wasn't there, but she did accuse the police of standing by and while they disrupted, you know, her speech, what she's going to speak.
Well, I'm not sure I understand why the wanted you to pretend to take photos rather than taking photos.
Didn't need them. No. A threat of that sometimes will keep people from coming back and that.
And what would you do with the license plate numbers?
We didn't do anything with them. What the big thought was with the people down there and a lot of other people, that they were communists. Mm-hmm. And I think that's written up like that, that they were communists. Mm-hmm. And people didn't like communists. So that's the big thought about her. I don't know. I don't have any idea, you know, what her thoughts. Probably she was for the underdog quite a bit, I'd say that. You know, she tried to look out for him. Did she just die?
No. Mm-hmm.
She and her husband's been dead a while, hadn't
they? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's close to close to 9 years?
I don't know if she's asking.
Yeah, she's in her 80s anyway.
Is she still fairly active?
Yeah.
Yeah, she is.
We went down and interviewed her. Vaughn and I went and interviewed her. I guess it's been a month or 2 months. Mm-hmm. Longer than that, isn't it? Yeah. 2-3 months. Donnie was concerned because it was down, we were going late night in the West End. Mm-hmm. I'd never been down there, but I loved her to death, interviewing her, because mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I admired what she'd done. And
I think she probably come out and was straight out with it, too.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She's
I'm fairly straight out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know why I have to guard. I don't care. You know, it doesn't make me any difference. As right as I can be, it's as right as I'll be. You know, because that's just the way it is. It's too many people that sit back and whatever, and they know that's how I am on a police department anyway. You know what I mean? That's why I never did get up there. Yeah. You have to be the furthest you can get in a police department, as far as you can get, is captain without being a political appointment. Majors and colonels and chief is all political. Apartments.
So you retired after how many years?
45.
And you were a
captain
at that time?
Okay. Uncle Moore, let me ask you a specific question. I want to go back to something because I'm not sure if I'm straight on or if we. The one riot y'all were talking about breaking up, what did you tell me it was the police force that started breaking the windows with the slingshots?
Well, I thought it was. I feel it was. You know, I don't want to drop anybody.
Was that the 68 riot that they helped break up, or is that another riot?
No. Yeah, I don't think people know that, you know, or would think that. You know, I don't think people would know that. I heard it. I wouldn't let anybody do that. That worked for me like that. But I did hear it, and probably it went on, and probably it had something to do with the riots ending. It's something that I know. There's no doubt in my mind. Now, I don't know if I was lucky when I was down there doing them rights and that, because I'd right in there and that. But there's no doubt in my mind, if there's a bunch of people standing off on the corner, no matter what, white or black, and you get out of there with a machine gun, even better, probably a shotgun, you got attention. You know what I mean? You've got. It's a lot of people call it respect. You're respected. At times, you almost have to have that. A lot of times, you would like if you you have some trouble and you want to try and work it out, you want the police out of sight. If you need them, then you call them. In all probability, you may not need them. Probably won't need them. But at some points, like during the riot, you have to show that you have force there. And that's what works, is, I guess I had to say respect for the law, you know. And back in the old, I say old days, I could walk into, say, a place that was open after hours, and I wasn't mad. But I could go in there and hit my club on the table, make quite a little noise. I want everybody out of here in the next 10 minutes and be by myself. And the one that's are not out, you're arrested. They all left. I don't think you could do that nowadays. I don't believe that. I wouldn't want to try it nowadays. And white can be terrible. You know, any terrible people. I've had, I think one of the last homicides I made was, it was one of them I made anyway. This, we got a call to a house, the people that worked for me did, and we were close, a sergeant and myself were close. And so we went by, and there was a kid sitting there, and his wife. And his mother was out of her mind. And I said, what happened? He said, he shot his dad, you know. And I said, come on, come in the room with me. If you ask somebody in a hurry, say, what happened? How can you do that? He said, I was sitting over across from him, and he was laying on a couch, and this .22 rifle was sitting in a corner. Now, this kid's a male high student. Their house is real nice. Got bowling trophies and that on the piano or whatever. And he said, I just pointed his head, and I wondered what it would sound like when the bullet hit his head. And another. That's what police go through a lot. And then I had another one that, unusual, was two black men. And I went in there on the scene, and I said, what happened? You shoot him? He said, yes. I said, why? He said he was using my wash rag, and I told him not to, and he's coming out of the bathroom door, so I shot him. And as I can go on like that.
About a year and a half ago, I rode the Saturday night. It was about 10 to 7 shift in Richmond, Virginia with a police officer. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized what a really tough job.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Terrible. I remember two babies. One that wasn't walking, one that was walking, at, you know, at that age. Mm-hmm. And both their throats slit. Mm-hmm. I used to gas it out in a crowd. And I said, what you got on? What's that on you, Red? He said, ketchup. Mm-hmm. And, you know. Now that's terrible, those things happen.
I did that same thing. My brother's on the police force, and same one in Louisville. I tell all my students whenever, I don't know why, it'll pop up in class at some point. Everyone